to call the Real Property Committee meeting to order.
Turn that volume up.
Okay.
I turned it up on the backside of there too.
Let's try that again without the feedback.
Thanks.
It is 9:00 on February 6th. I'd like to call the Real Property Committee meeting to order and acknowledge that the press and the public were duly notified of the meeting in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. First item on the agenda is approval of the previous minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next part, citizens' comments. Are there any citizens who would like to come forward and make comments? And you know the routine, name and address.
Jim Rye, 3904 Cameron Boulevard. Just a couple things today as it relates to the agenda. I know you'd be talking about the consultant for the real estate services, commercial real estate services later on in the meeting. And I've read the proposal, and I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if we get any based on the proposal. I mean, I think that it's going to be a challenge to get somebody to fill all the requirements that's listed in the RFP or request for proposal service. I just think that it's asking for a lot, and I've been in commercial real estate most of my life, and I mean, I could do most of it, but you're talking about preparing the RFP, and you're talking about a lot of legal, you mean you're talking about legal expenses that, you know, I think would be cheaper for the city from a legal perspective to have our attorney on the city level do that. But it'd be interesting to see what kind of proposals we get from that perspective. And then as far as the old business D status of list of certified arborist, I think you have to be careful when you start limiting the number of arborists that can do work out here. I think if you look at our code, if they're certified as an arborist and they've got their certifications, it's like a CPA or a certification. If they've got that certification, then they ought to be allowed to work, I think, on the island. I think you, in real estate, you get bogged down in if you limit the number of home inspectors, you limit the number of electricians, you can open yourself up for lawsuits. So just have to be careful, and you just make sure that they're certified registered arborists with the state of South Carolina. I think that would probably be enough to make the list. I would hope that they understand that the we take our trees serious out here on the island. And if you read the tree ordinance and you know, by its the way it's written, I don't know that Donnie would even have to use the big heavy equipment to pick up any yard debris if you follow the letter of the law. That you know, anybody's got that much debris should probably have a permit to remove those type of limbs off of a tree. So I know you guys have your hands full, but I just wanted to speak on those few items that were on the agenda for today.
Thank you. That would be it, given the limits of how many citizens are sitting in the audience. I'm pretty sure we don't have any other citizen comments. So from there, we will move on to item four, comments from the marina tenants. Michael?
Good morning. Good morning.
State for the recording.
Yes. Michael Fim, Tidal Wave Water Sports, 6941st Avenue, Isle of Palms, although our mail never comes there. All right, first, am I talking too loud?
No, you're good.
You two are probably aware that our dock permit needs to be updated. Our dock actually hasn't been permitted since 1995. Since 1995. Until November, I was very unaware of this. I was called by Catherine Kowalczyk of DHEC, and she said, well, you know, your dock needs to be re-permitted. And it's actually because you're the leaseholder, you must get the permit reflecting your usage and everything else like that. So fortunately, we have everything done except for the survey part. And at this time, I would like to get the ask council, Real Property, if we could get the services of ATM and Kirby. I've spoke with Kirby, Desiree spoke with Kirby. And we felt that it's best that that ATM does do it, because then moving forward, one company has all of the data for the marina. So whatever moves forward and happens, that it would be the easiest for any transition. So I don't know if that's something you need to put to, you know, DHEC has been very patient with me because they realized they didn't issue me any fines, any citations, any, because they realized it was an oversight. But I do want to keep the ball moving. And my concern is that waiting almost a month until full council, if that's what you guys deem, that their patience may run out a little bit and I'll have to go and use somebody else, which I would rather use Kirby because of the relationship that we have.
Okay.
Secondly, you guys have all known that our electrical, when our dock fell in during the last dredge project, our electrical was torn apart and the electrical was redone. Unfortunately, the company did a subpar job. I can't remember the name of the company, but essentially they ran out of wire underneath, so they just started creating junction boxes, and they're not waterproof, anything like that. So every time we have a high tide, a real high tide, we lose all power, and we have to go underneath there and dry it out and then flip the breaker switch. Good thing my dad's an electrician, so helps out a lot. So moving forward, we decided that we're just going to get some bids. We're going to pay for it. We've received two bids so far, one for $18,788, the other one for $14,000 flat. So we're going to try to get a couple others, but it's tough to get everybody out right now. I have two more quick items. Last year, we tried to do a shuttle service / concierge service. We ran into a little problem, a stopgap, because of we were asking for the use of the hut in the Front Beach parking lot. So it didn't occur, but we still wanted to continue to move forward. We are going to do a standalone one this year. And why I bring this up is because Desiree had sent out an email, which it was very exciting to me, in regards to a van pool that has been started by the Charleston Area Transportation Study, CHATS. They approved funding for the purchase of 8 to 10 vans. And they're basically going to bring people to the island, and they're going to incorporate. No,
that's not how it's
going
to work.
Okay, but in any case, it got me excited, and I wanted. I mean, we already had planned on doing that, but I just wanted to let you know that we want to move forward with ours to help incorporate, anything that we can do to help. And additionally, we want to offer it to other marina tenants and subtenants. So I mean, maybe I misread it, and I just
And just for the record, the way that program would work is geared towards the hospitality industry. So for the employees of Front Beach, the marina, and Wild Dunes, to be able to meet at a place and then use that van to come to and from work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the
extent of it.
The extent of that pilot program.
Yeah, and we wanted to do when I was reading that, and maybe I'm. We wanted the ability to pick up our employees from a location with a van. So in addition to using it for customers, we also want to help, because some of our, employees will park on the island somewhere. So we're going to use that to eliminate any employees parking at the marina itself. Lastly, if you remember in the fall, we did a residence day for all the residents. Randy, you guys were all out there. It was a very good success. It was for the Children's Hospital last year. We're going to do one on April 14th. This time we're benefiting the Exchange Club. Again, it's free to come out, but if you want to just donate. And if anybody misses it,
they're donating the next day.
Okay.
it's April 15th, get the human.
Oh. Yes, it's also Palm Sunday. But anyway, if anybody misses it, we also will be having another Residence Day in our week after Labor Day. So we're not sure who we're going to benefit that one, but we're going to reach out for that one.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Other tenant comments? Brian, I do know you have one issue that if you wouldn't mind, since you and I have spoken to it, just so we can get this on record.
Yes, and it regards Brian Berrigan, Isle of Palms Marina, 50 41st Avenue, and I do get my mail there. The timeline regarding the restaurant bid, that was very nice, by the way. However, I would like to make a recommendation that, there's so much time and effort going into getting the RFP out to the public, and by the timeline, there's very little time for the prospective bidders to do their due diligence, get in there, check out the property, and make a proposal. So I would suggest that, you lengthen that at least to 90 days, and that would allow more time for prospective bidders to.
And Desiree and I have already talked about that, and the need to, you know, keep an eye on the whole thing. But the idea is to give people, you know, as much good knowledge as we can of how we're trying to work this timeline. But well appreciated that 45 days is probably not enough to do quality response.
Thank you, sir.
No other comments? Jay?
Not at this point. Thank you.
So moving to old business. Item A, the discussion of the Marina restaurant lease bid process timeline, status of building assessment, and the status of engaging the services of a commercial real estate consultant to guide and advise the city throughout the bidding process.
Okay, I'll give a quick update on this. The building assessment report will be completed and submitted to the city next Wednesday, March 13th, which is 1 week ahead of schedule. In terms of the building report, the building assessment report, we received, and I shared with you all recently, a note that we received from Hill Construction, who is the company that's conducting the building assessment, and the architect, Charles Mudlow, about some concerns with the condition of the subfloor of the walk-in freezer, which is something that the restaurant owner has highlighted before to the committee. They actually concur with the condition of that walk-in freezer and have some concerns about some public safety, have some public safety concerns about you know, that area being in imminent need of repair. We've met with the restaurant owner on site to discuss what, you know, the information that we had received, and requested of him a engineered plan, a structural engineer, for him to engage the services of a structural engineer to come together, to come to the city with a plan, a repair action plan, to address those concerns. We've communicated that via letter to the restaurant owner, and are constantly in communication to try to get this thing resolved. The deadline for the submission of proposals for the commercial real estate consultant is this Friday, March 8th. We have been continually changing and updating the timeline that I presented last month in accordance to where we are within the process, and I appreciate Brian's input about the time that would be the appropriate time that folks would need to be able to present and prepare a thorough proposal to the city. So we'll be incorporating those comments into our timeline. That's all I have so far.
If I may, and to Jim Rye's comments, as I understand the RFP is not a requirement that a submission meet all of those requirements. That was certainly if we could pick the ideal, all those requirements would be met. But I think we're all cognizant that we may have people that are wishing to participate in that that may not. And I'll own the one where I added, you know, preferably waterfront experience. I don't know that we can find somebody with waterfront experience, but the idea was, you know, let's put out there that which we wish to have and see what kind of responses we get back. So comments are appreciated.
Yeah, the city always has the ability to waive any requirement depending on, you know, our evaluation of those proposals, so we have that flexibility.
Okay. So item B, update on removal and replacement of the underground storage tanks at the IOP Marina.
An update on that, the contractor has said that they're hoping to be done with most of the work by next week. They plan to get those dockside dispensers installed this week, and then pouring the concrete on the fuel island pad by next week. So everything goes according to plan. We should be completing that process very soon.
And for the marina folks, once again, the marina is still open.
It is still open. We have not yet received any results from
the testing.
I requested an update from the engineer recently, and they haven't received anything yet, so we're still waiting on that.
So I have to ask my question. Are we in any risk of pouring concrete and finding out that we have a problem due to testing?
No, that wouldn't be the case.
That would not be good.
Yes, I think we'd all agree.
Okay, so item C, update on the Marina Docks Rehabilitation Project.
ATM continues to develop the permit application documents and working on arranging a formal meeting with the permitting agencies. No update other than that. I think they're still working on putting all those documents together. But yeah, they're obviously, yes, in contract and moving forward. It is, as we all knew, that the permitting process was a lengthy one.
Item D, status of the list of certified arborists. Let me make a comment to this before. Citizen Jim Rye's comments as well. The intention here is not to limit which arborist can do business on the island. The intention is if you choose to remove trees on your property, that we have arborists that we recommend to the residents that we work with that are approved by the city for that process, because I think we all know and can probably all living here point to egregious activity where trees have been taken down that should not have been taken down because they were able to find an arborist willing to, for a fee, give them that letter, right? I know personally I can name several lots that were bulldozed over a weekend that should not have been. So, you know, it's not accusatory in saying that, you know, select arborists are violating this. I believe there have been. And, you know, the comfort level of council and the will of council was that we come up with a list and, you know, maintain a working list on behalf of the city. But if somebody wants to hire an arborist to come do work in their yard and they're not removing trees greater than 4 inches in diameter, have at it. Pick your arborist.
We have not done a lot of progress on this, to be quite honest. I think, you know, we still have to talk to the city attorney and do a little bit more digging into the right way to do this.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure whether or not we would need to amend the code in order to have a process like this in place. Douglas and I have chatted about this, and you know, if we're able to do this and we need to go through the motions of amending the code, the right way to do it would be issuing a request for qualifications and picking who's certified that way, rather than a deliberate putting together a deliberate list of the people we think are qualified and certified. So on that end, I really don't have much to say.
This is one we'll leave it on the list as we have in other committees, and stay tuned, but it wouldn't rise to the top of the highest priority that the city's working on at the moment.
It does not, unfortunately.
I think it's overreach. And I thought about it. I mean, you have a state process. I mean, I have to go through all the qualifications of every other CPA in the country. And if I had a community saying that I was excluded, for what reason?
That's a concern, certainly.
That's a concern.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think Mr. Rye is correct that we, playing devil's advocate, we could set ourselves up for a possible lawsuit.
And I think, you know, the code does require whoever write that letter to be a certified arborist.
Right.
So
something wrong, the state will take it up with them, and they'll deal with them accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
probably not as it relates to city code. I mean, that it may come back from the attorneys that the onus is on us in terms of enforcement and ensuring that there is compliance from the arborist. So let's wait and see what the attorney says.
Yeah.
And if it's overreach, it's overreach, and we drop the subject.
And I don't think, and Douglas, you may want to chime in, but I don't think that we have found ourselves in a situation where we think that situation is happening to an extent that may warrant, I think, a more aggressive approach to controlling who can or cannot cut trees. Do you think that would be fair?
Well, I would just offer this, if there's some kind of middle ground that we wanted to reach, if we feel like, you know, having just a set few is overreach and we want to find some middle ground, I might suggest, and Desiree is right, it is fairly rare, I would say a handful of times a year, that I will get a letter and I'll go look at a tree and I'll say, you know, I'm not a professional, I'm not a certified arborist, it doesn't smell right to me. And that happens very rarely. Maybe middle ground would be in those that we give a little bit more in the budget of professional services to allow me to hire an arborist that I know and trust to just look at those isolated incidents and then have there would be a process if an arborist is found doing something that is egregious and inaccurate, then there is a state process for weeding that out. And somebody doing that, that was caught doing that, there would be an incentive at the state level with his licensure to not do that. So that might be, it would be a different tact, and it might be middle ground of where we don't, you know, we're not telling owners you have to use it. And I guess that's the concern. If we only had three or four, those three or four start, because I think there's a different policy of producing these letters for each tree company. You know, if there's only four, they obviously kind of control the market. And I guess internally
we've
had
some. Maintain a list of recommended but not mandated.
Yeah.
You know, and where we have more comfort with those. And, you know, if I'm a resident looking to take a tree down and I'm telling the city, well, I used to, you recommended, I didn't have to. That's a less egregious approach than saying only these three.
We would. I have always been cautioned about recommending somebody. Mm-hmm. I have answered, because I think it's part of the public record, who the city has used.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I felt on solid legal ground doing that. But, you know, that's something we could certainly talk about.
I think the
right
answer is we have an attorney involved, and I'm sure we're going to get a legal opinion on this.
Yeah.
And, I would advise that we all take heed of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. New business.
Oh, Douglas, you can stay.
He was hoping to go back and rest in that seat over there. New business. Item A, discussion of moratorium on future lot subdivisions as it relates to stormwater management. Desiree, would you like to lead and I'll follow?
Well, I think, you know, there was some concerns about a current permit application for a lot subdivision in the Forest Trail area. And that generated some discussion or questions from council about the concerns that are being raised by the residents related to drainage and stormwater management in that area. Questions were asked about what process would the city need to take in order to establish a moratorium as a way of potentially addressing the issue about lot subdivisions. But I think it's part of a broader conversation that we need to have. Technically, you know, a moratorium really is a very extreme land use action that the city could take. Completely suspends the rights of property owners to use their property as they wish or should. There are some questions and some conversations that need to happen and things that need to be in place before we even consider establishing a moratorium. So I think if the issue is associated with drainage or is it about development, there are other avenues that the city could take to try to get a grasp of the situation and try to address, I think, the concern from the residents and from council.
Let me break this down into, I can only deal with one item at a time in my brain, so I tend to break these things down. So the idea of a moratorium was brought up by the mayor and asked to be addressed by the Real Property Committee. And the discussions I've had both with the mayor and with Desiree are, what is the problem we're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. Right. So in the perfect world, if, you know, somebody has a large lot and there's several remaining very large lots still on this island and I'm the property owner, I'm going to have a problem with the moratorium, right? And it certainly affords an opportunity for legal challenges. And the problem with moratoriums is they have to have set timelines. The problem we're looking at regards this was really through much conversation with those folks over by Forest Trail, both at the Planning Commission, at the Public Safety Committee, at Real Property. And it's unfortunate that activity that's occurring, there's nothing we can do about in regards to current zoning without, you know, putting the city in legal jeopardy. So I asked of Desiree, is the problem drainage? If it's a drainage issue, we're probably not going to solve the drainage issue on this island for many years. Secondly, drainage presents itself in multiple ways. One is stormwater, and the other one is king tides and other extremely high tides. And if you look at those properties, solving the drainage problem through cleaning our outflows and doing other activities is not going to solve the fact that there are times when the tide exceeds the level of the land, right? A moratorium is not going to affect that. So, you know, what we said was let's begin to look at what are those items we do have some control over. And this bleeds into the next item on the agenda as well, how we deal with trees, how we deal with the size of buildings on these lots. And there was appetite a while back, predating me on council, to start looking at the 40% coverage rule, and should we start scaling that back? Should we start building smaller homes? Should we be more cognizant of permeability and the things that we can do around permeability? So my intention in this committee discussion was to begin that discussion again for those items that I think we do have some control over. And I would ask Councilman Ward, you were certainly around when these discussions of lot size, coverage, and permeability were in prior councils. I'd rather take the approach, excuse me, of readdressing those issues, which I think we can control, rather than trying to do broad-based moratoriums that I think are, you know, frankly, if we want to get accused of overreach, I think we'll have a real issue there.
And I think that there are other alternatives that are available for city council to consider that are, again, less burdensome on property rights than a moratorium. Like you said, moratoriums tend to have a time period and an end goal. So we would say, you know, a moratorium due to what circumstances? What is the problem that we're trying to solve? What is the problem that we're trying to solve? And at the end of the moratorium, what is our expectation? You know, is it a study? What's our expectation? What are we trying to get out of this time period where, you know, lots of divisions would not be allowed? There are other, other alternatives by using the city code and amending some of these rules that could help us address the issue of lots of divisions if that's the case. There is the pending ordinance doctrine. If the city were to make any changes, and if the goal is to seize or not allow any additional subdivisions, and city council decides to look at permeability or look at lot coverage or look at the minimum requirements for a lot to be able to subdivide, as soon as city council approves first reading of an ordinance, then the pending ordinance doctrine comes into play. So any new permit, even though they would meet the requirements of the existing ordinance, if they don't meet the requirements of a pending ordinance, they would not be allowed to be approved. So that's another alternative that's available to city council, but that's sort of less aggressive than implementing a moratorium.
Your thoughts would be appreciated. I my own thoughts are I'd like to see you start looking at scaling back the lot coverage and start to address things that, you know, residents consistently ask. How are these giant houses being built on relatively small lots? And I think, you know, we've had ongoing discussion about permeability. To me, if real property chooses to address those two areas and see what the will of the council is, then we're in a much more consistent and palpable way of addressing problems. Thoughts?
Well, if I had a problem, I'd say it.
Yeah. Okay.
I totally agree. And I'm always thinking, what can we do to keep ourselves out of court?
That, I mean,
on both sides, you know, exactly. Of this issue. It's very sensitive, but I agree with Desiree's statements that there's other avenues we can take. We need to explore it. I think moratorium sounds pretty heavy-handed, and it is. And like you said, there's a timeline involved, and there's other avenues.
And I don't think we can resolve the timeline, because if you're in court, the first thing they're going to ask is, when can we anticipate this being lifted? And I think the answer is, we have no idea. And that's my concern. But I would like to direct, and we don't need to vote on anything, but to come back and look at, you know, recommendations for lot coverage and permeability, and start to, you know, lot coverage addresses square footage, you know, sort of as a byproduct of, you know, how much you can build on land. And if you listen to the residents' concerns on Forest Trail, I think they have less concern about smaller homes being built on three lots that are subdivided to five than the overall fact that somebody wants to redevelop that land.
And I don't know, Douglas, if you want to speak to what the Planning Commission's plans are related to this
issue. And by the way, let me say, the purpose of having this discussion today was so we could give some direction back to the Planning Commission. It was not to decide on their behalf what we should do.
Yeah, they are. The Planning Commission is looking at all of these issues, and I think that they're going to come back with some pretty comprehensive recommendations for you all to consider.
I'll be very interested in seeing what they have.
Same here. Okay. City's tree ordinance. These things always blend into one another. So you know, of course, I've gone over to where the concerns are on Forest Trail. I've also watched, you know, 13 very large palms get eradicated on Waterway, which I think everyone was kind of shocked to see that. And when you start looking at the tree ordinances, you ask yourselves, should we be revisiting the tree ordinances given the state of development on the Isle of Palms today versus when those ordinances were put in place? So a couple of observations for me. I don't like the idea that palm trees have no protection regardless of their size. I don't like the idea that pine trees can just be removed as well. So if you listen to citizens' comments and you go look at that land that's under question, young lady that's spoken before council several times, she's not really affected directly by the water rise. She is grossly affected by the fact that we're going to clear a pine forest in front of her because we can. Right, so when the developer goes in, there's very large pine trees, understanding that they have small root bases, understanding that they're very brittle in storms, these trees have likely been there before Hugo and will likely be there after the next storm, but they're pine trees, so we just let them go. So I don't know what we need to do in this meeting, but I think it's time to take a hard look at where we're at on these. And by happenstance, I was at a dinner last night with Island residents who was struggling with, why do I need to have an arborist give me a letter when the tree in my yard is clearly dead? And he said it's $350 and had spoken to the planning department and no, you gotta have an arborist letter. I said, wow, we can cut down a living, breathing, live palm or pine tree and we struggle to take down a tree that's clearly dead without an arborist letter. And I don't know if all that is accurate, Douglas, so I'm being a little bit careful here.
I've had a couple of problems and let's see, Douglas, and he's just came by.
We'll take that one offline, but
it probably was not, people call things dead that are not obvious, and I say, if it's obvious to a layperson it's dead, then it's...
I don't want to get lost in that, you know, misdirection, if I will, so I apologize for it, but I do think, you know, when we look at these things and the things that we could do, you would not be able to build in this subdivided area largely probably to the plan of that developer if it weren't for the fact that we're allowing these trees to be taken down, right? So to me, it's another avenue. Trees clearly absorb water on the island. And, you know, I know we put $300 into a tree fund for the trees that we take down, but that doesn't replace the fact that we're taking down some very large trees that are also beautiful, right? I mean, I would have a problem living across the street looking at those orange tags on those trees and knowing that because they're pines and not oaks, we can take those trees down. So I would ask that we, you know, think about that and come back to real property and perhaps readdress, you know, what the intent was at the time of these ordinances versus what we think the intent is today.
Well, the intent, I was sitting on council at that time, but it was right after you got up. Yeah. And a lot of people had a lot of damage from pine trees. I got a tall pine tree on my island.
I know you do.
And this, and you know, they're long before you do that. And, but I still worry about it when a storm comes because they are very brittle.
Yeah,
they would,
know.
You know, you would drive from here to McClellanville, and the closer you got, the entire forest for miles, as far as you could see, there was pine trees snapped off about 10 feet off the ground. And it took many years to recover. That's what, I see your point, but that was the thinking, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I just looked at it as a potentially legal mechanism to control some of the growth on the subdivided or rebuilt lots, right? So I think, you know, I looked at everything and said, you know, what could we do, which is within the purview of the rights of the city without infringing on property owners' rights? Trees are one area that we could look at. You know, again, I don't know what the plans are for those five lots. It looks to me like a lot of land clearance is required to do what the developer wishes to do. We probably can't change the tree ordinance and affect that development. But another avenue to look at, and I think it has a direct correlation to stormwater and ground drainage. So I'll leave it at that and we'll address it.
I'll ask Douglas to sort of speak to the existing regulations associated with palm trees and the changes that were put in place as part of a recommendation from the Planning Commission, if I'm not mistaken, several years ago.
Yeah, so just kind of a quick overview on what's happened with the tree ordinance at the city. Pine trees, as Councilman Ward has talked about, were, their protection was taken away after Hugo, and I will tell you that, and the Planning Commission, probably on four different occasions over the last 10 years, has exhaustively gone into the tree ordinance, has called in Clemson arborists, who are urban foresters, to talk about these things. There have been people who have advocated for putting pine trees back into the tree ordinance as being protected, and basically it becomes a very emotional issue. People are terrified of them. I am routinely contacted by people, probably live near Jimmy, that say, my neighbor has a very tall pine tree. It's now in striking distance of my house.
Tallest on the island.
Please make, it's not really your house, but you know, we need to force the removal of these things. So people feel very strongly about, they feel very strongly about pine trees and the potential damage.
Yeah, mine's leaning.
So it's a surprisingly emotional issue for people that
really
dealt with
is.
It after Hugo. And,
exactly,
and you just
right.
need to know that going forward, that and the Planning Commission, like I said, probably two advocated for them to be, and the other five were just
I would
adamant.
Again, defer to the Planning Commission on recommendations, but I thought it's worth having some discussion given.
He's exactly right. It's extremely emotional.
And then palm trees, so and part of this also went back to the urban forester from Clemson, that palm trees are technically not a tree. They do not have a real ecosystem. They don't have a lot of environmental effect. They are basically ornamentals. And probably the most recent change to the tree ordinance was they have always been protected until probably three, well, and they still are protected. You have to get a permit to remove them. But the case was made by the sea captains that had, they had at the time 50 palm trees that were in various stages of growing up in front of their units. They wanted to remove some of those and replant them in the front or pay, you know, because they had so many. And not, like I said, probably the most recent change to the ordinance was to allow that to be done. They came before city council. The city studied it. Arborist said, you know, there's really not any environmental benefit to keeping them. They're tiny root balls, little, you know, there's not much of a ecosystem around them. So yes, we think it's reasonable if you pay to have a new palm tree planted, or you, if you want a new palm tree planted, you plant a new one and take out an old one. It was giving owners that flexibility, which was the will of council, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years ago. So if you wanted to go back and undo that change, I don't see any great
risk.
I don't see any great risk. It's the way it historically was, but it was just the will of council at the request of property owners to modify it to allow that fairly recently.
I would like to revisit it. I just, and I think, you know, when you see the what feel to be very egregious removals, you know, pretty soon we're not the Isle of Palms. And it's not to say that, you know, folks can't for a legitimate reason remove them, but it seems to be a balance between what we're allowing and what we should be allowing that we ought to revisit.
Yeah.
Okay. Item C, discussion of the city's allocation of greenbelt funds and allowable projects. So this came up as an artifact of some request that greenbelt funds potentially be used with the exchange club. And there was some conversation at the last city council meeting as, you know, is that an appropriate use? And I think, you know, all council members were respectful of the work that the Exchange Club does, but the question was, should we be participating in or advocating the use of greenbelt funds for something that requires a membership in order to, you know, utilize those premises? I don't know enough about greenbelt funds and greenbelt fund allocation. It seems to me that, you know, the appropriate use of greenbelt funds is for things that are, you know, fully open to the public and provide, you know, to the intent of what the Greenbelt funds were established for. The concern there was, you know, let's not get, you know, pardon the expression, wrapped around the axle to the point where we're not applying for Greenbelt funds. And I think we put it back on the city to say, give us a list of projects that we think, you know, work within the timelines of these available Greenbelt funds so that we can prioritize those and go after those funds. And beyond that, Desiree, I don't have a comment. I think
intention. Correct, and that was the instruction given to the staff last week, and we'll be working on putting together a list of all the projects that would be available to the city to pursue. Typically, you know, those funds are used for land acquisition and conservation of green space.
Yeah.
However, there are some, there's a little bit more flexibility for beach communities to do minor improvements to provide public access to some of these conservation areas, which would include boardwalks, footbridges, trails, unpaved trails and unpaved roadways. And you all know we purchased the Carmen R. Bunch Park using Greenbelt funds. This is not unusual to the city. The city has pursued some of these funds before. Currently, we have a little over $100,000 available for the first round of funding, and we expect to have roughly $1.3 million available in the course of 25 years, which would be allocated annually depending on the revenue that we get every year. We could use Greenbelt funds for payment of principal and interest. If we were to get a loan to purchase some land, we could do that. However, those funds, we're estimating roughly $32,000 to $35,000 annually for the second round of funding. But that is certainly depending on revenue, so that's not a done deal. Depending on the revenue generated, that would be our portion. So it would be a risk because we couldn't really.
The risk is you'd have to cover it with ATAX.
Correct, we'd have to cover it with some other source of funding. But that's certainly a possibility. So we'll be working on a list of potential projects. You know, we'll work with department managers to put that together, and it'll be up to council to sort of prioritize and see, you know, what project is worth pursuing for Greenbelt funding.
Okay. I think there is many, many, many potential uses for this, but I do strongly feel that using it to donate to a private club that you have to have a membership to should be at the very bottom of the list. I don't think that should be a priority.
It should be on the list.
It shouldn't be on the list at all. We shouldn't even. I'm against even considering it.
Well, I think in fairness to the comments at the council meeting was, you know, should the or could the city have discussions about use of that property with city administration? I don't have any problem with that. I do have a problem with Greenbelt funds being allocated to something that, beyond that, I think you know, the Exchange Club has liability issues, and the city is opening themselves up to other questions as well. And there's just too many other Greenbelt projects that I can come up with off the top of my head that I'll leave unmentioned in this meeting. And let city come back with a prioritized list like we did the last time we applied for grant money.
Right, I totally agree. They came to us a few years ago and wanted $250,000, but it wasn't Greenbelt money. But we decided at that time that it wouldn't be appropriate to use public funds for a private club.
And
we wish them well, but
yeah, and frankly, that's not the purpose of the agenda item. It's you know, direct the city, come back with a list, and let's do what we've done in other committees, prioritize that list, and go after the money.
Right.
Last item is discussion of marina leases as it relates to the overall vision of the marina property. Just a brief comment. This is not to get into a, you know, long discussion today of, you know, overall vision. Right. We had a lot of commentary around vision during the referendum, which was resoundingly defeated. There were items in that, you know, we still own some responsibility to, right? We own responsibility for the care and maintenance of any of the real assets that we have in that property. And we own some responsibilities to weigh things in consideration of the value delivered to the residents of the island and the use of that property. So, the idea here is I don't want to I mean, in the ideal world, we'd be given answers to the tenants that say, on this date, we'll have this decision regarding these properties, whether it relates to renew or do a new lease with Morton Creek Grill, with Tidal Wave. I think where we're heading, and I have a difficulty in making all the dates line up the way I'd like for them to line up. You know, Michael Fenn has rightfully brought up issues regarding the permitting. The permitting has impact on long-term vision and use that the city has for the dock space, right? So we have some inherent conflicts in what we're doing. I will say, you know, my intention sitting up here is to adhere to the lease terms, to adhere to a proper process for getting through this, and to expeditiously move it as fast as we can so that the businesses that are currently there and potentially there in the future have the best available data. And beyond that, I didn't want to get into a long discussion now because I think we're trying to drive this timeline. Desiree and I talked about, to Brian Berrigan's request of having longer on the back end, can we consolidate in the middle and still try to rein these timelines in, respecting that Tidal Wave's lease expires in September of 2020 and Morton Creek Grill in October of 2020. Desiree, you want to add to that?
Yes. What I'll add is, you know, similar to the process that we had, that City Council had in discussing the future of the Marina restaurant lease, and there was some advocacy about putting that lease up for bid before granting a lease extension. I think that same conversation, I would encourage City Council to start that same type of conversation around the Tidal Wave Water Sports lease, because that lease is up 1 month before the restaurant lease. So whether or not we're going to be issuing another RFP, you know, similar to the process that we have been laying out for every lease renewal, then that conversation needs to happen, because as you all saw from the timeline last month, how long some of these processes take to put together. I think that, you know, during the Marina referendum discussion, there was a lot of conversation about, you know, using that space for a public dock, and I believe that, you know, that there was a lot of advocacy from the community, and not advocacy, but, you know, a lot of interest from the community in seeing something like that. And if that is something that City Council wants to consider or wants to evaluate further, then those conversations need to start happening soon, because time flies, and, you know, again, putting these things together and all the information that you all need to make informed decisions take time. So I appreciate this being on the agenda, because, you know, I don't want these deadlines to sort of creep up on us without being prepared.
Nor blindsiding tenants.
Correct, anybody.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think, you know, as this process moves forward quickly, you know, I certainly want to give Tidal Wave an opportunity to address council as well, and not, you know, throw something at them in a meeting and have them walk away angry.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't get their day in court, if you will.
During the referendum process, this Tidal Wave lease came up a lot more than you would think. And the silent majority of the people that I talked to expressed interest to me. They really liked Tidal Wave. This is not just what they, that they use it. They do occasionally, but they have out-of-town guests, and we all have out-of-town guests. They might not even stay on the island, that have kids, and is very popular with them. So if you listen to everybody, it's not an easy issue at all, because it's a lot more popular than I would have thought.
Well, I mean, I'll make this comment. I've had this discussion with Michael Fenn. You know, Ted, I was not on council at the time, but Councilman Kinghorn was the one that said, you know, can you quantify the value to the island of this business?
Right.
The problem that I do see, and I think Desiree hit on this issue, is unfortunately the only two areas of the marina in its entirety that are available to the public is the Tidal Wave dock and the Morton Creek Grill dock space. The rest of it is blocked by a lease through 2045, right? So I think there is a warranted conversation to happen soon with the public as to the intent and the vision for the marina. We can say that it's a It's a commercial entity dedicated to commercial enterprise, which it is right now, or it's partially publicly available. And, you know, I know everybody thinks everybody has their biases, right? And I've been accused of having my biases. My bias is to do what the public wants us to do and nothing more, and to give people ample opportunity to present the case before council and have council weigh in on what we wish to do with this going forward. So I...
And it, again, I think it presents an opportunity to city council, because this lease is expiring, if we want to change the way that it operates, or if we want to, whatever we want to do, that would be part of the, that would be part of it, of the process, similar to what we're doing with the restaurant. And it is up to council whether or not they want to, put in, have a competitive process for continuing that, a similar operation, and have it be open and transparent and fair and open to anybody who would want to, or renew a lease, renew the lease. I think based on the decision from council related to the restaurant, I think it would be, I would expect that city council would want to follow suit. I don't know that I think I'm trying to say is this is the sort of the time, I work in timelines, and this is sort of the time where I feel like this conversation needs to happen if anything will, if anything's going to change.
And unfortunately, you sit here in these seats in the uncomfortable position of knowing that there are financial burdens being placed on the businesses for the decisions they need to make now that don't work well with the decisions that we have to make post choices on these investments. And I don't know a way around it. If I had the magic wand for what to do with Morgan Creek Grill and Tidal Wave, I'd wave it, but we don't have it. So all I can do sitting here and speak for council and board is be as transparent as we can in our thinking in these meetings, and again, try not to blindside these businesses with things that we're unanticipated. And hopefully that's appreciated from the businesses. That's all I have on that. Okay. Tenant reports.
They're all current, and if it is okay with you all, we haven't had an issue with tenants paying it on time, so I'd like to remove this from the agenda from now on, and unless there's an issue.
I don't know, Jimmy usually likes to add things and see if we can make these meetings longer. You okay with that?
Well, it doesn't really take time.
You
but
can remove it.
It's
not being very transparent.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a problem with it.
You know, unless
if there's a problem, let us know.
You bring it up if there's a problem. Exactly. We don't need that. Beyond that, next meeting date, 9 a.m. Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019, in the conference room. There is no executive session necessary, so I will make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. God, you're a hero.